Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Steve Barton, and today we are talking with Andy Scheckman of Miles Franklin Precious Metals. Andy, thank you for coming back on the show.
Great to see you, Steve. Happy New Year to you, buddy, and it's good to be here.
Yes, Happy New Year. Hope you had a good Christmas. How have sales been going lately? Are you selling more gold or more silver, or what seems to be the market reaction?
You know, there are very few asset classes on the planet, Steve, that have the story behind it that silver does. Ultimately, I think the place to be is gold, ultimately. When you see the central banks make such an aggressive push to accumulate so much of it, to me, that along with the Bank of International Settlements reclassifying it as a riskless asset, in essence, and the central banks massively accumulating it and repatriating it from the New York Fed and the Bank of England, as we discussed last time I was on your show. But I think silver is the best pathway into getting there. The story that silver offers, the shortages in nature, the fact that it's disappearing, the fact that it's found in what's called epithermal, very close to the surface. So the big deposits were found years ago. The fact that the expansion in all of the industrial uses and green and digital applications, the renaissance globally in its monetary applications or qualities or properties, the fact that its relationship between it and gold is nearly 80 to 1, yet it's coming out of the ground at 7 to 1. The story that it is telling is generational. It's a once in a generation value play, in my opinion. And I've tried to look at it from every single angle and try to shoot holes in it, and I can't. The fact that the price isn't rising, well, you can blame that on four commercial banks, in particular Bank of America, the biggest, who more or less took over the dirty work for J.P. Morgan when J.P. Morgan paid a fine for manipulating the metals market of $920 million and had to back out of their short positions. Well, doesn't mean that their buddy down the street didn't take over where they left off. But the bottom line is a concerted effort by a handful of banks to hold the price down. The question is why? Why are they using such going to such lengths, extreme lengths, to hold the price down? And that's a discussion that certainly, you know, we can get into. But the bottom line is that I don't think that there is an investment on the planet that offers what silver does. And while in my heart, I'm a gold bug, in my heart, I believe that's ultimately where we want to be. I'm telling my clients that silver is the opportunity of a generation. And I say that to you with 100% sincerity.
I get asked that quite a bit. Why is inflation rising so high at the clip it is, and why have the metals not followed that? And I go back to what I hear from Rick Rule, and he says right now half of 1% of all Americans are invested in anything precious metals, and that even means having just a stock in it. And he said the average over the last 3 to 4 decades is 1.5%. And so most people don't know about this yet. You know, they haven't, the average Joe, the average public hasn't learned that this is a good investment during times of inflation. And when that happens, if it just goes back to average, that's a 3x increase. And if it goes back to what it did in 1980, that was 8% of the population. So that's a 16x increase from where we are. When the general public realizes that their dollar is, it's not necessarily the prices are going up, it's that the value of their dollar is going down, and it takes more of those dollars to buy the same gallon of gas or the same car. It's the same car it was last year. You know, it's just gone up in dollars. Then that's when the real squeeze starts.
Yeah, the rising prices are not inflation. Rising prices are a symptom of inflation. Inflation is an increase in the money supply. And look, 50% of every dollar ever created in the history of the United States was done so in the last 2 years. And so what we're seeing in terms of inflation is not only in consumer prices, but also in assets. You look at the stock market as an example. Bank of America, Steve, came out with a report just a few weeks ago called their Flow Show report that showed a $900 billion inflow of money into the equity markets in 2021. Now, that's a lot of money, but it becomes an awful lot of money when you realize that that eclipses the previous 19 years combined. So you have nearly two decades worth of inflows, courtesy of the Federal Reserve and their easy money policy, where hedge funds can borrow money at next to nothing, pump it into the equity market, make huge bonuses, pump the prices of the equities they're holding up sky high, pay back the loans, which are a joke, at 2% or less, and create an environment where price discovery becomes next to impossible. You're seeing it in real estate, you're seeing it in equities, you're seeing it in the bond market. You're seeing it in all asset classes. And that's why when we talk about inflation, the elite give a crap less about inflation. The elite like inflation because their asset prices are being inflated. It's the people who don't have assets that really are hurt the worst. And it's the average Joe. The average Joe is finding it harder to put food on the table because his grocery bill is twice what it was. It costs more money to drive to the grocery store and back because gasoline is up. It costs more money to heat your home because natural gas is way up. And so when we talk about the effects of inflation, they're certainly insidious. And, I guess where the rubber hits the road is where the ability for them to shut off the inflation spigot. You know, when we talk about a Fed that's threatening to taper, okay, well, is it a token taper or are they really going to do something substantive? The last time a politician really did something substantive was 1980. And it was a situation very similar to this with inflation running out of control. What did they do? Paul Volcker raised interest rates to 20%. Can you imagine what would happen to this economy with interest rates at 10%, 8%, let alone
20% collapse?
Right. And so the options that the Fed has are becoming fewer and fewer and fewer between. And I think that inflation is here to stay, at least for the foreseeable future. I think it's inflate or default, really, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, I agree. I'm getting a lot of questions from listeners since I only got into gold and silver about a year ago. And since then, the economic situation has become a lot more obvious to me. And I'm getting a lot of questions about what percentage of physical should I have? Let's say a guy wants to put in 5% of his net worth into gold and silver. Of that bet, what percentage would you recommend or do you think a guy should put into gold, physical gold, and what percent into physical silver? And would that be different if a guy is in his 20s as opposed to if a guy is in his 70s?
Well, I'd like to first tackle, you know, the question you didn't ask me, and that is the 5%. And I'd simply say this, that, you know, 5 or 10% is typically what you hear out of money managers who really most have very little understanding about the reasons to own precious metals. Many financial advisors learn more and more about less and less till they know everything about nothing. And I think when you talk about asset allocation, you talk about a diversified portfolio is kind of what you're getting at here. I think diversification is a tool used by financial advisors to mitigate exposure. You become the best of the worst or the worst of the best. Asset classes rarely move in harmony. Some move up, some down, some move sideways. To me, the way to succeed in investing is to identify the primary trend or the way the river flows. The primary trend in my estimation is of a dollar that is denigrating in value, a dollar that is ultimately on the way out. And so if that's the way that you think the river flows, you don't dip a toe, you jump in with both feet, you plug your nose and go under the water. You don't put all your money into gold and silver, but instead you broadly diversify within the primary trend. Instead of being broadly diversified amongst asset classes that are schizophrenic, you move into the primary trend fully and broadly diversify within it. Precious metals, both stocks, ETFs, and physical. Gold, silver, platinum, palladium, mining shares. You could do agricultural land. You could do agricultural ETFs, oil and gas, anything that will give you exposure opposite the dollar in a broad, diversified manner, to me, is the way to go. Now, I think 5% is woefully understating what people should own, but I'll let them make that decision for themselves. In an environment where the dollar is losing massive value, in an environment where you have record number of insiders selling, over 80 billion in insider selling, it's all time record. CEOs like Elon Musk selling 11 billion worth of stock, for Microsoft CEO selling 50% of his holdings, 50%. Now that's not what you do when you expect the market to go much higher. The bond market, where can it go? But down, in the respect that either that or interest rates go nominally negative instead of real negative, as we have right now. And for those people out there who don't quite understand what I mean by that, you have nominal rate of return right now. The stated number on the 10-year treasury is 1.5%, yet inflation calculated by the CPI is at 6.5%, which means the real rate of return, when you take the nominal rate minus the inflation rate, is -5%. Now, that is woefully understating what real inflation is. Real inflation is actually, when you factor in the way that it used to be calculated prior to 1980, north of 13%, courtesy of John Williams and shadowstats.com. So real inflation at 13% calculated against 1.3 or 4 or 5% on the 10-year treasury, you're way, way upside down. So when you look at the markets around us, you have all-time highs in stocks and bonds and real estate, all inversely correlated to what? A rise in interest rates. Used to be stocks and bonds were inversely correlated, which gave you a little bit more of a balanced portfolio. Now, if interest rates rise, they both collapse. They have lost their inverse correlation for the first time, maybe ever. And so when we talk about what is a good allocation, I would say first and foremost, 5% is woefully under what you should own in precious metals. And, you know, Steve, I want people to understand that precious metals, to me, they're not an investment. They're wealth. It's money. It's money I hope I never need to use. If I do, I'm damn glad I have it. And it's not just for an emergency. There'll be opportunities. As Rick Rule talks about dry powder, there will be opportunities when assets and asset classes find real price discovery. Whatever it takes to get it there is debatable. But when assets fall into a fair price range, those who have not risked to speculation all of their money, their stash, their investment portfolio, I think we'll be able to take advantage of some of those opportunities. So it's not just an emergency, it can be an opportunity. And if not, you give it to your kids, you give it to your family, charity, nieces, nephews, whatever. So first and foremost, in a very roundabout way, I think 5% is too little. Whatever that allocation may be, I think silver is the buying opportunity of a generation. I think ultimately you want to be in gold. And when the ratio corrects from 80-1, where we are right now, which is rarefied air, it's only been here a few times in human history, to its average of the last 150 years of about 42-1, well, that would be a double. In other words, if someone were contemplating, should I buy $50,000 worth of gold today or $50,000 worth of silver? Well, I'd say buy 50 worth of silver at 80-1. And when it corrects to its average of the last 150 years of roughly 40-1, you switch into gold. It would be as if you bought 100 worth of gold today. But what's crazy about that, and Keith Neumeyer is a friend of mine. Keith is the CEO of First Majestic Silver. And, you know, Keith has been publicly telling, it's one of the biggest silver mining companies in the world. And he owns exposure in gold mines too. And he said, look, globally, it's coming out of the ground at 7-1 right now. So at a 7-1 ratio, although it's priced at 80-1, you could argue it's 11 times undervalued, silver is. And maybe we get closer to that geologic ratio as the need for silver in green and digital applications is so expansive, and yet the supply, the in-ground supply is disappearing. And so I look at it as the buying opportunity of a generation. I do, even though I look at it as wealth. The bottom line is, what allocation? Well, I guess that, you know, depends upon your age and what you're trying to do and all that kind of stuff. But for someone who's much older, I would say gold is the place to be. For someone who has a little bit of time on their side and can lug things around, because 50 grand in gold, you could put literally in one hand, it would be 25 ounces, 30 ounces. 50 grand in silver, on the other hand, is going to be about 1,600 ounces. So you're talking 150 pounds. It's a big difference. But I think it offers an upside potential that we don't ever associate with precious metals. So for me, for someone who is our age, I would say minimum 70, 30, 60, 40, very minimum, silver to gold. And I could make an argument for going 100% in silver with the intention of trading to gold down the road. But there's no playbook. There's no established protocol or set criteria. It's whatever makes sense to you. We will show you the logic, Miles Franklin, and explain to you what we think will offer you the best pathway to getting to where you want to be. But yeah, there's no right or wrong answer.
Okay. It of the six major mints, US, Canada, UK, South Africa, Austria, and Australia, if a guy were going to get into the coins, the 1 ounce bullion, which of those mints, are they all kind of about the same? I'm thinking for America, just because we're Americans, Eagles might be the best. I don't know. What's your opinion?
In a perfect world, yeah. I'm a U.S. mint distributor, one of only 27 authorized resellers in the world. And I love the U.S. Eagle, but they're just flat out too expensive in relation to everything else right now. The premiums on them have not come down in over 2 years. And they used to be 50, 60 cents more than those other five mints that you mentioned, Austria, South Africa, Canada, United Kingdom. But now they're $5 to $6 a coin more. So not so much in gold, but in silver. I can't quite explain it other than to say to you, the US mint has been the model of inefficiency. If price were no issue at all, yeah, I'd buy silver eagles. But there are many other choices that will present a better value than the silver eagle. I have over 60,000 of them in stock. And I've had a hard time selling them or recommending them because here again, when I look at opportunities in physical market, oftentimes they center around distortions or anomalies in price. And the silver eagles are an anomaly in price in relation to all of the other coins. I've been doing this for 31 years, Steve, and I've never seen silver eagles trade for 2 years at such a massive premium. I look at it as a distortion to all of the other six coins, including the maple leaf, which, you know, that's a little higher than normal too, but even still, it's still $4 higher than the maple leaf. And that's unusual. Instead of 40 cents, it's $4. And that's really a very, if they were to say what's different this time, well, that's quite different. So, but of those six major mints, you could call them Pepsi, Coke, Sprite, Dr. Pepper, you know, 7-Up, A&W. I mean, everyone recognizes them. They're very liquid. They're very sought after. And so, you know, if you go to a restaurant, have a hamburger, and you're dying for a soda, is it going to kill you to drink Pepsi, even though you love Coke? I don't know. I mean, it's a poor analogy, but the point is they both drink the same in the end. And one has Lady Liberty on it, and the other has Queen Elizabeth. Is that enough to make you not want it? I get your point. The Eagle would be my number one choice, but you have to ask yourself, is it worth a premium that not only is much higher, but never been that way my whole career until COVID started. And then all of a sudden, bang, premiums on Eagles globally went through the roof and have never come back down. One other thing, it's important to note that premium goes both ways. It's not a one-way street. If people are selling silver Eagles back to us, they're going to get a massive premium. So much so where you could sell silver eagles and buy, you know, Philharmonics or something like that and walk away with way more silver. So it's not just a one-way street when we talk about premium, which is a function of supply and demand. If you're selling, you're going to get a high premium also.
What are the implications with selling? Let's say a decade from now, a guy wants to trade his metal for gold, or maybe even turn in some of that to put a down payment on a rental property. There's certain amounts that if you sell over, you got to report to the IRS. A lot of the reason that we're getting into this is to try to get out of the system. You know, what do we
need? You're supposed to report anything. If you sell any investment and you capture a gain, you're supposed to tell Uncle. The thing of it is that most of the items that we sell do not require dealer reporting, which means it's the honor system, which means that if a listener or yourself didn't do the reporting, no one knows, but it's not legal. And so we try to show you what you are obliged to do and how to step right to the line of, without stepping over, what the law is. And the truth of it is that I'm sure a lot of people don't report it because there are no dealer reporting requirements. I don't advise that. But it's important for people to know that most items that a precious metals company will sell you or buy back from you won't trigger dealer reporting requirements. There are some items on sellback that trigger dealer reporting. I'll tell you what they are in gold and silver. In gold, on the 25th ounce in one transaction, if you sell back Canadian Maple Leafs, South African Krugerrands, or Mexican 50 pesos, in quantities over 24 ounces in one transaction, a 1099 is filed. You could sell 24 coins every 4 days and that wouldn't be the case. But if you did it 25 at once, there would be. The only other item that triggers reporting in gold are gold bars in excess of 32.15 ounces, which is a kilo. Oh. You sell 32 1-ounce gold bars, there's no reporting. You sell 32.15, there is. And it's a dealer filing a 1099 on your behalf. Nothing else triggers it in gold. In silver, it's bars or generic rounds in quantities greater than 1,000 ounces in one transaction. Yeah. Anything else does not trigger it other than bags of junk silver pre-65 coinage on the $1,000 face value amount. So if you have 10,000 dimes, which is 1,000 face, that would trigger it. Anything under that amount does not. So, you know, you want to advise people on structuring, but I'll simply tell you, here's what the law is, and anything under that doesn't trigger. You would not want to call a dealer and say, I have 42 bags of junk silver, 42,000 face value, and I'm never going to pay taxes, so I'm going to sell you 900 face each time. I don't want to hear that, and neither does any other dealer. Or, but conversely, you know, I have 250 100-ounce silver bars. I'm going to sell them all to you, but I just don't want to trigger reporting, so I'm going to sell you 9 at a time. No, I don't want to hear that. But if you call me and say, hey, I want to sell 900-ounce bars and 900 face of junk, fine, done, boom, no reporting by the dealer. Anything that you sell as a consumer, it's your obligation to pay taxes on when you get a profit. But very few things will actually trigger it on our end in terms of reporting to the IRS.
Okay, that's good news. I appreciate the way you tiptoe around that, and I understand why you did. Mike Maloney, I want to get into, you also sell platinum and palladium. And if anyone that hasn't seen Mike Maloney's Hidden Secrets of Money series, it is an amazing series on YouTube and well worth the check out. I got a platinum coin for you, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think maybe the reason he said that it won't be money, I'm not sure if you can really see it there with the virtual background, but it looks very, very similar to silver. And at a glance, I don't know that you could tell the difference, but this thing is actually like 30 times rarer than gold, right? But the price is about half of what gold is right now. Maybe it can't be money because it's so similar at a glance to silver, and people wouldn't, maybe if this metal was actually red or green or something, it would have integrated itself as more valuable or price higher in than gold. But what's the story behind platinum?
You know, platinum doesn't have the monetary history that gold and silver do. Platinum's main uses are in catalytics. You could argue that catalytics are on the way out. All the auto manufacturers are moving battery powered. Now, platinum is used in fuel cells and in connecting parts of the battery, in particular fuel cells, to other parts of the battery. The need for platinum industrial is there, but nowhere near what it is in silver. But its main uses in catalytics, I would argue, are on the way out. And if you go back throughout all of time, there was a brief period of time in Russia where platinum had some sort of a monetary history or track record. But in general, throughout all of time, it's gold and silver that are used as monetary instruments. To me, platinum is at best an investment. And the argument behind it is solid. I mean, it's for forever, it's been twice the price of gold, not half the price. It's certainly undervalued from that perspective. But I agree with Mike, I don't think it will be viewed as money the way gold and silver have. But nonetheless, it's not a bad idea to have some of it. Remember, at the beginning of this discussion, I was talking about gold and silver to me aren't an investment, they're wealth. And you could argue platinum's wealth too, but to me, it's also more of an investment. And it's a tertiary part at best of my portfolio. The argument in its relation to gold and in relation to palladium and its rarity and all of that stuff makes sense. But it doesn't have the history of protecting one's assets quite the way that gold and silver does. So for me, it's a distant third in terms of what I would do in allocating funds to silver and gold.
Okay. What about palladium?
Gotten way too expensive. So when I started in this industry, platinum was the main catalyst for unleaded vehicles. Palladium really wasn't used for much of anything, although they share very similar qualities, properties. And the price of palladium was a third the price of platinum forever. 300-400 in palladium and 900 to 1,000 or higher in platinum. So at some point at the turn of the century, 2000, 2001, somewhere in that neighborhood, most of the auto manufacturers retrofitted their machinery to use their assembly line machinery to use palladium instead of platinum for unleaded vehicles. Platinum is the main conductor or catalyst rather for diesel fuel automobiles and trucks. And so there's another nail in the coffin for platinum as they're moving away from diesel power engines, especially because of the emissions. And so here again, palladium, main use in unleaded fuel catalytics. But if the combustion engine is going the way of the dodo bird, as it appears, I mean, you got GMC saying they're going fully battery by 2030, as most of the manufacturers are. It's an investment, and it's out of whack proportionally. Now, it's come back quite a bit. It had been much higher. That's 18. Well, it's interesting. The bid. Here's another thing about its volatility. The spread between bid and ask is $150, which is almost a 10% spread. Because actually over a 10%, not just under a 10% spread, but that's unusual. The spread between gold is 1840 cents bid, 1801.40 ask, a dollar. The spread between platinum and palladium bid and ask, palladium bid and ask is 1763 and 1913. So that there's so much volatility in palladium. It's an investment. And I think to me, if I look at all the metal that I own, if I own 5 ounces of palladium, I'd be shocked. So okay. I like it, you know, I get it, I understand it. It's a tertiary investment at best. It's not wealth. It's you could argue a asset or a commodity that is losing its primary use case over the next few years. So I'd probably avoid it myself.
Okay. Okay. Interesting coming from a guy who's selling it. I like your honesty, sir.
To me, if you're not straight with people, if you're not honest, you're transparent. We've been in business for 31 years without a customer complaint. I started this company when I was 19 years old. I'm 51. So, you know, it's I would never tell someone to do what I wouldn't do myself. And if you do do it, you're going to do it understanding my viewpoint, at least, which is, you know, I wouldn't turn down if someone gave me a palladium coin, but I wouldn't, it wouldn't be the first thing that I would buy if I were looking to protect my family.
Yeah. 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 It, I want to share a couple of graphs here, of the, let's see, here we go. Okay. Gold. All right. So here we got, this goes, all the way, if we zoom back, it goes back to 1800, but, the price is pretty boring there for about 150 years. This is where we came off the gold, where Nixon completely took us off it. And we can just see it's just running up a price. This was the great financial crisis, and we could see it went from $200 and something all the way up to almost $2,000. Got this nice cup and handle pattern, and this is right about where we are here. This is the one that I really like. This is silver over the last 200 years. Now, if we kind of zoom in here on the 1980, right? So this was the big period of the 70s coming to a peak in silver. We had another run up after the financial crisis that peaked in 2011. And this is where we are here at $22 change. When what other commodity do you know that is half, but less than half of its price from 40 years ago?
The only other one I can think of is sugar. And I think that it has a similar graph, but you're right. From a standpoint of valuation, there are very few things on the planet that are half of what it was in 1980 with the uses, the utility that silver offers. That's kind of what I was getting at when I was saying it's the value play of a generation. Now, I don't know if that site you're on will show you a graph of the gold to silver ratio going back 200 years, but if it did, I could make my point to you here in terms of, does it do that, by the way?
It does. I can click that in here. Let's see.
Do that real quick, and I'll show you my point, why that I think it's such a great value. Not only is it depleting in nature, not only does it have massive use cases, but when you look at the value or the comparison between gold and silver, it's extraordinary. I'll show you what I mean here if you can pull that up.
All right, let's see here. I'm clicking through the buttons.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Okay. Right now, well, I checked this actually before we got on, and it was floating around 78 to 1 or something like that. There we go, 78.9 to 1. And I know what you're talking about. When you go over, I'll bring this out to, let's do it out to a monthly perspective so we can see this over a grand period of time. Okay, so this is going back to the 1950s, and really the data starts getting a lot better around 1968. But here we are here, and I see what you're talking about. Back in 2010, this got down at one point to 30 to 1. 2006 and 7, it was around 45.
Not only that, 45 to 99. If you took a piece of paper and put it at 78 to 1 and covered what's below, all you see is just a little bit of those peaks, right? And if you do it the other way, you see 95% of the action is below where we're at. So we're in rarefied air at 80 to 1. And yes, it did get up to 125 to 1 in March, the greatest disparity in human history. And yes, we have time, but that's for 5,000 years. If you were to keep going back prior to 56, you'd see it's flatline real close to 16 to 1 for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years, 16 to 1, which is the original geologic ratio. When Keith Neumeyer tells us it's coming out of the ground, it's 7 to 1 now, meaning the big deposits were found decades ago. But if you just look at that graph where we are and just look at the green line and then go from the green line there, that represents a very small portion of the entire graph, whereas the majority of it is below the line, meaning this is a price anomaly. And I think it is a price anomaly in particular when you realize that it's not until just recently that the applications that silver would find itself useful for, digital and green, have become so pronounced. Prior to this, what you had, photographic, you had other uses. It was taken out of the coinage in 1965. So Look, bottom line is there are very few things that offer the story that silver does. And I, whether I were selling it or not, I would tell you that I can find very few flaws in that argument. But the biggest flaw being the price hasn't cooperated. I think that'll change. And I think the time to do it, if we go back to Rick Rule again, if, you know, I've known and worked with Rick for 25 years, and he'll tell you that the greatest deals that he ever did are when purchases were made in out of favor assets. When you see an asset class trading at half of its 1980 high, pretty darn out of favor. Yet when you look at its depletion in nature and its massive expansion in uses, I can find very few things that offer the potential that silver does. And when you see the commercial banks making such a concerted effort to hold it down, it's somewhat illuminating that it must be pretty darn important for them to violate antitrust law, like JP Morgan, who paid a $920 million fine to the Justice Department in 2021 for holding down the price of silver. So there's more to it than just price, and the fundamentals are screaming value, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I did an episode, you mentioned Elon Musk and the 11 billion shares that he sold, and I was able to find what he put that in, and he put it in
silver mine, right?
He did physical gold, gold ETFs, Bitcoin, and kept some in cash. And it's like, just follow the big money, you know? What is the big money doing? He's taking his own stock and buying gold with it. I mean, I think that's...
Well, and why do we see record outflows by the insiders? Record. $80 billion this year in 2021. $80 billion in insider selling. Does that sound like an environment where the insiders, the people who know what's going on with their companies, does that sound optimistic? Does that sound like they expect things to go higher? Or does that sound like they're getting out while the getting is good, at least with enough where they can feel comfortable letting other stuff ride? But I find it to be ominous myself.
Yeah, I went over with my aunt. She had a portfolio that her brother, who's since passed away, put together for about 10 years ago, which was an amazing bet at the time. I mean, she got into Apple at $15 and Netflix when it was just starting out, and her portfolio has quadrupled in the last decade. And I think I got her convinced to take some profits off the table. let's put it into something that's a real physical asset.
Well, I know that, you know, you're the genesis of your podcast is poker. So imagine, you know, it's like if you're playing any casino game, whether it be a game of skill like poker or a game of chance, you know, like roulette or whatever, if you win, the only way you win is to take chips off the table. I would go every year with a friend of mine and our families on vacations. And more often than not, after the kids were in bed, he and I would find ourselves in casinos playing blackjack while everyone was sleeping or whatever, you know, and having some beers. And at the end of the night, every single time, invariably, this guy had pockets full of money. And I would say to him, how the hell did you do that, Ted? I've been sitting with you the whole night. I didn't see you win all that money. Where the hell did that come from? He says, well, the one thing you didn't see was that after every hand I won, I put a green chip in my pocket. Every single time. And I walk with money. And that's really the kind of the lesson here is that, yeah, you may win, but if you don't take chips off the table, did you really win? And that's kind of, you know, the point here is that when another analogy being, you know, when I started in this industry in 1989, I was 19 years old. And my dad said, there'll be one rule. We started the company together. One rule and only one rule, or I'll fire you. I said, oh, okay, well, I can deal with that. What's the rule? He said, you'll buy something every 2 weeks, period. You'll pay yourself first, period, or I'll fire you. Well, he's been retired for a long time. He's not going to fire me any longer, but I've honored my word to him. And for 31 years, every 2 weeks, I've bought wealth, not an investment. I put wealth away. And it's wealth that, like I said, I hope I never need to use. If I do, for an emergency or opportunity, I'm damn glad I have it. If not, I know that when my great, great, great grandchildren inherit it from their parents, hopefully, the year 3000, long after the dollar bills in our wallet are hanging from a frame in the Smithsonian, it's going to have value. And there are very few things that you can say about that. So, or at least make that same statement about very few things in this world. So anyways, that's the way I look at gold and silver. And I think that where we are in the stage of the cycle, we're getting to the very end of a cycle that has allowed the US to live at a standard or above our standard of living, largely in part to the good graces of our foreign creditors. And I think those days are coming to an end. So you own gold and silver not to get rich, you own gold and silver to protect what you've worked so hard to obtain your whole life. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I finally got through to my dad, and I did it through a Christmas present. One of the presents I gave him was a 1921 Morgan silver dollar. And I said, on there, it says $1. And 100 years ago, this was jiggling around in some guy's pocket, and that was a dollar. I said, now it takes $25 or $30 to get one of those. That's inflation, and that's what's happening to those numbers in your bank account.
Yeah, and, well, you can look at, say, the same thing about a 1964 silver dime is worth roughly, what, 20 times its face, $2? Yeah. So you could say that, you know, the dollar has lost 20 times its value since they took silver out of the coinage in 1965. So it's you're exactly right. And that's exactly what inflation does, is it insidiously, slowly drains purchasing power. And I don't think there's any end in sight to inflation, because if they stop inflating, if they stop assisting, if they stop providing stimulus, the sky-high valuations that we have seen will collapse under their own weight. It's you don't even have to pop a hole in it; just stop putting air into it, then it'll start to deflate like a souffle taken out of the oven too quick. And that is something I do believe is in our future as well. And this is why you own precious metals, because the dollar that you call money is rapidly losing value courtesy of the Fed and the printing press. Remember, 50% of every dollar ever created in the history of this country was done in the last 2 years. I mean, a trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. We're running into numbers that are too big to ever be reconciled or ever be paid back, and God help us all if interest rates rise.
Yeah. I agree. Well, thank you, Andy. My whole goal with the show is to just get the word out and hope that we can make a difference in the average Joe's life, that you know, hopefully they can see this coming now through our work. And if you want to order precious metals through Andy like I do, you can go to stevebartonmoney.com, click on the precious metals tab. We will put a link in the show notes. And thank you very much, Andy. And
yeah, that's important that they do it that way. Or send an email to info@milesfranklin.com and put Steve Barton in the subject line, because I'll make sure your listeners get the best price in the country and personal attention and service. So it's really important. I will make that pledge and that promise to you and to your listeners. So we're honored to have you part of what we're doing, and for us to be a small part of what you're doing. And but it's certainly an honor and a pleasure. I wish you and your listeners a happy, healthy new year. And again, I encourage them all to reach out and give us an opportunity to earn their trust in business. And we'll make sure they get the best price in the country.
Thank you, Andy. All right, I'm going to end the call here, and then I'll give you a call and place an order.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Take care. Bye.